with Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. The breaking news from Latin America. Caracas, Venezuela. The United States government is moving to ease a few economic sanctions on Venezuela in a gesture meant to encourage resumed negotiations between the U.S.-backed opposition and the government of President Nicolas Maduro. The limited changes will allow Chevron Corporation to negotiate its license with the state-owned oil company, but not to drill or export any petroleum of Venezuela origin, two senior U.S. government officials told the AP. The officials spoke under the condition of anonymity. Professor, this is a complex story to do with the bad acting of the Maduro regime, illegitimate in the opinion of Washington, and the ambition of the Biden administration to find alternative or in additional sources of energy, chiefly oil, because of the worldwide shortage, because of the prices, the inflation, and et cetera. So the easing of sanctions, does this bless the Maduro regime now to continue its exploration of integrating itself into the community of nations, at least in Latin America? Is Maduro being restored to full authority?
There are certainly a number of different mixed signals, and this has been very controversial, as you were in Washington and in the rest of the region. I would say for the moment, the biggest impacts are the signaling that is put forth to other nations in Latin America, as well as external actors such as Russia and China and others. Now, the U.S. is very careful to indicate that it is actually giving up very little in concrete measures in the near term. The specific general license, which appears to apply to Chevron, but also could apply to the Spanish company Repsol, would appear to allow them to negotiate future oil operations rather than actually giving them a license to expand existing operations. So as you pointed out, the White House is very clear to indicate that it is not authorizing, for example, new drilling, which would expand capacity. So, and also is very careful to indicate that future actual authorizations would be contingent on concrete steps, including at the negotiating table, and including commitments to human rights and other things like that. Those statements may reflect some of the political pressure that you see in Washington by people such as Bob Menendez, who's been very critical, although being of the president's party. However, the irony, if you think about it, is that to the degree that you're not actually authorizing Chevron to increase production, and even if you were authorizing Chevron to increase production, you're probably only talking about 400,000 barrels a day maximum over the next year or so, as Venezuelan production is teetering around 800,000-900,000 barrels per day. And so the irony is that the actual effects in near term are minimal. However, what you see is the indication going all the way back to March that we are negotiating with the regime. And the appearance of that has already led to a cascade of other actions. You have the Argentine government of Alberto Fernandez indicating that now is the time to readmit Maduro into the Inter-American community and reestablish relations. You have peoples like Colombia's candidate Gustavo Petro also talking about, if he were president, reestablishing relationships with Maduro. You have some indications that actors such as Russia and China may be seeing this as the first steps to them reengaging with the Chinese. And certainly we just had the new commitment by Iran to step up the oil that it's supplying to Venezuelan refineries. And so I would say the actual effect of getting real oil into U.S. hands in a way that would impact prices is minimal. And the irony is that the symbolic messaging that is leading lots of other states in the region to reengage and to see the U.S., frankly, as weak is probably far more damaging.
There are a large number of Venezuelan officials and family members under some form of sanction. I think the most significant, given the direction of these meetings, is that the leader, Maduro, is under indictment, accused of, I quote, to flood the United States with cocaine and use the drug trade as, quote, weapon against America. Are we contemplating that that indictment will go away, Evan? Is that the scale of a conversation between the parties?
the symbolic gesture that we've seen in the current moves by the administration is to remove sanctions on a relative of the First Lady Cecilia Flores, Carlos Malpica Flores. Having seen this when I was previously in the State Department, oftentimes it's not unusual to de-sanction one person to indicate that more could come if you cooperate. Treasury OFAC sanctions tend to be very flexible, as well as sometimes certain state actions. So it's only a gesture. Certainly, there's a lot of concern that what's being bargained for is the thing that Maduro wants most, is that for him and a greater number of his cronies to be out from under those sanctions, which are probably damaging them personally more than they are worried about the oil production itself. So it's difficult to know what it's going to come. Again, the White House, I think, has been very very strident to say we're not giving away anything yet unless Maduro comes back to the negotiating table. But clearly there have been strong questions about whether this functions as a negotiating strategy or not.
You mentioned Gustavo Petro, the candidate for the presidency in neighboring Colombia, who is reportedly be well in position to win the race, although there are two rounds coming up, the first and the second. But in any event, the polling favors him. Gustavo Petro has made remarks that seem contradictory. On the one hand, he is critical of the extraction business, and he's looking at fossil fuels in Colombia. On the other hand, he's looking at resuming or repairing or in some way enlivening relations with Caracas, between Bogota and Caracas. There has been a cold war for several years, maybe even a hot war along the border. Those two ambitions seem not to work together. So what do you make of Petro's promise? First, that he's going to do away with fossil fuels, and second, that he wants to work with a fossil fuel giant, his neighbor.
I would say that the character of Petro and the amount of information that we have on terms of his past behavior as a mayor of Bogota, and also with his public rhetoric and his past record as an M-19 guerrilla, is a little bit more than, for example, we had on the young Gabriel Boric, the recently elected president of Chile. I think in both cases, you have a desire to take very radical steps to change policy, particularly in terms of energy and environment and things like that. And so not unlike Boric in Chile, what you have with Petro is a commitment to, so to speak, decarbonize the Colombian economy, which sounds good until you realize that a significant portion of the Colombian economy is based around oil exports and coal exports. And so that would be devastating, whatever you try to replace that with, especially at a time in which the Colombian economy is reeling from the cost of COVID-19, social stresses from the increase in prices for foodstuffs, as well as oil and other things, as well as you alluded to. There's a whole range of other ambitions that could potentially cause capital flight, including everything from tax increases to providing free higher education, to providing state jobs for the unemployed, to increasing resources for state pension systems, taking away from Colombia's really excellent private pension system, some reforms in a central bank, which many people would argue is not broken, desire to renegotiate the free trade agreement with the United States because of feelings that, despite the enormous benefits it's had some adverse effects on the Colombian small-scale agricultural sector. But of course, as you alluded to as well, in foreign policy, the fear of Petro trying to reopen the door to Venezuela and Maduro and reestablish relations as Alberto Fernandez in Argentina has also talked about doing. And so I think probably all of those are worrisome, both in terms of the signaling as well as in terms of the potential impact on capital flight in the Colombian economy. But at the end of the day, probably the difference with Boric and Chile, whose popularity, as we've talked about, is also falling rapidly. Like Boric, there's some question that Petro, if elected, and that appears very likely, he has 35% of the vote for the first round as opposed to 23% for his closest competitor. But if elected, he already will face a relatively conservative Congress. So like Boric, very difficult to actually get anything done. So probably a lot of frustration. And then at the end of the day, the question of if he can't get anything done, what are his Democratic credentials? And then there, with the M-19 background, with some of his other statements, there are, I I think maybe deeper concerns than we saw with Borders and Chile, to wonder in what direction he would take Colombia. And that has, I think, a lot of people, especially on the right in Colombia, worried right now.
Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, commenting on the breaking news of conversations between Washington and Caracas about restoring in some fashion Venezuela to the Community of Nations, and Gustavo Petro's ambition to work with Caracas no matter, given the troubles along the border, it's a very large ambition. This is the New World Report. I'm John Bachelor.